Today we continue the fourth chapter. Today we completed till 4.26. So basically the section that is going on is the different ways in which sacrifices can be performed so as to acquire transcendental knowledge. So yesterday Krishna talked about how in the brahmachari life one offers the senses to the mind, and in the grihastha life one offers the sense objects to the senses in a controlled and regulated way by which one can become enlightened gradually. Now in 27, Lord Krishna talks about the process of pranayama.
Sarvanindriya karmani prana karmani chapare Atma Sanyam Yogagnau Juvati Jnana Deepite.
Others who are interested in achieving self-realization through control of the mind and senses offer the functions of all the senses and of the mind state as oblation into the fire of the controlled mind.
Jnana Deepite. So, Deepa means light. Jnana is wisdom or knowledge. So jnana deepite, so those who desire to have their lives illuminated by jnana deep, what do they do? Sarvan indriya karmani. So they, whatever are the functions of the senses, prana karmani chapare. So actually the connection between the soul and the gross body is brought about by the mind. And the connection between the mind and the gross body is brought about by the pranavayu. So oxygen is only one part of the pranavayu. Pranavayu is the air that sustains our life. We can recall that from the Putana pastime that Krishna sucked out the pranavayu from Putana while sucking the milk from her breast. And when the pranavayu was sucked out, the person dies. So actually when the soul leaves the body, the Vedanta Sutra explains that actually the soul does not go just with the subtle body. The soul goes with the subtle body and the prana also goes. So when the prana goes, pranavayu goes, then the body cannot function anymore. So Srila Prabhupada explains that this pranavayu has many components, and we will discuss the details, the technicalities of yoga in the sixth chapter. Because there are many terms, there is Raj Yoga, Ashtang Yoga, Hatha Yoga, Kundalini Yoga. So the sixth chapter is entirely devoted to Dhyan Yoga, and we will discuss the details of it at that time. But here, basically, there are five kinds of vayu. So pranavayu is the basic vayu that sustains our life. Prabhupada explained that apan is the one which goes downwards. Saman is like with sama, it maintains the equilibrium. Vyana leads to what modern biology calls as peristalsis, the expansion or shrinking. When a digestion takes place, the alimentary canal expands and shrinks. Similarly, our body also will be in out, there's expanding and shrinking. So that is done by the Vyana Vayu, and the Apana Vayu as Pran, Apan, Vyan, Saman and Udan. So the Apana Vayu goes downwards, the Udan goes upwards. And now we may wonder, what does it mean the airs go upward and downwards? So actually the Vedic model of the body is different from the modern scientific model of the body. Basically whenever we say that, okay, science considers the body to be made of certain organs, which is fine. But how does the functionality of the body take place? For example, according to modern science, diseases take place because of certain germs. We get, say, tuberculosis because of TB bacilli increase in our body. Now, that is the allopathic way of understanding it. According to Ayurveda, germs are always present in the body. But when the kapha vata balance gets disturbed, then and the body becomes overcome by disease. So now, both of them are correct. Now the Kapavata Pitta is not something which is accepted by modern medicine, modern biology. So for example, Jatharagni. Modern science doesn't understand the concept of how can there be a fire in a body. But that is not a normal kind of fire. In the Vishnu Sahasranam Saptagni, there are seven kinds of fires that are described. So this, that's why I said, oxygen is only one part of the pranavayu. And basically, the various motions within the body are activated by air. So in that sense, upward movement, downward movement, lateral movement, all these are done by the air. And Srila Prabhupada explains that actually the soul who is attached is called as a paragatma. And the soul who is detached is called as a pratyagatma. Raga means attachment. So parag, attached to external things. That is a attached soul. And gradually, as I was telling, the soul is here, the subtle body is here, the gross body is here. So the link between the soul and the gross body is through the subtle body, which can be simplified and referred to as the mind. And the link between the mind and the gross body is through the breath. And we can see this to some extent. Our breath is affected by our emotions. As soon as we get angry, our breathing starts becoming faster. So conversely, if we can breathe slowly, we'll find that our mind will also become more peaceful. And that is one of the primary principles of pranayama. That by gradual regulated breathing, the thoughts of the mind become regulated. The thoughts of the mind may become regulated by pranayama, but by pranayama itself, they don't become purified. Because purification requires contact with something more positive, something spiritual. But surely regulation is possible through pranayama. And when the breath is regulated, as even modern science is acknowledging that the regulation of the breath often helps in regulating the body and curing the many diseases and increasing the overall health of the body. So, now here Krishna is talking that by the regulation of the breath, there is regulation of emotions. And by the regulation of emotions, gradually one's emotions stop controlling one's consciousness perception. And then one rises to the platform of knowledge. So that's why Sarvana Indriya Karmani Prana Karmani Chaprade Atma Sanyama Yoga Agnau. So the essence is not just the breath control. It is important, but ultimately Atma Sanyama is required. So when there is self-restraint, then one can rise to the level of knowledge. So Jnana Deepite will happen when there is Atma Sanyama. And this regulation of the breath helps in some way to bring about Atma Sanyama. So in one sense, you know, if a person is agitated by lust, a very gross physical way to control lust is to just stop one's breath. You know, just choke your nose itself. And just don't let the breath flow. What happens is that the mind is agitated by lust. And the mind feels that I have to fulfill this craving of lust. But when you stop the breath itself, a much more fundamental need of the body is stopped. And then the mind's attention gets distracted. The mind panics. I need breath. And then the temptation can be checked. So, of course, this should not be done too regularly or too extremely. But this is point is that a gross, even by the physical means, just like if somebody fasts, if somebody fasts nirjal, then you know, apart from food or water, if after fasting nirjal the next morning, even if a sexual temptation is offered to a person, say, I want water, I want food. The body's more fundamental need is deprived, then the body's attention goes to that level. So, that's how, by regulating the breath, Atma Sanyam can be achieved. In the next verse, Krishna describes other forms of yajna. As you remember, yajna is not just the activity of fire sacrifice. Yajna is the principle of sacrificing what we could use for ourselves for a higher purpose, with higher knowledge. So there has to be some higher knowledge to do this, and that higher knowledge deepens when one actually does this. Dravya yajna tapo yajna yoga yajna tathapare svadhyaya jnana yajnascha yataya samshita vrataha.
Having accepted strict vows, some become enlightened by sacrificing their possessions, and others by performing severe austerities, by practicing the yoga of eightfold mysticism, or by studying the Vedas to advance in transcendental knowledge.
Yes. So, samshita vrataha. Vrataha means vows. So, strong vows that somebody accepts, that is also one way to advance in knowledge. So, dravya yajna. Dravya is wealth. So, when one is in charity, that is called as dravya yajna. And interestingly, in the purport, Prabhupada talks about dharmashala, annakshetra. Even at a material level, if one sacrifices one's wealth for a noble cause, ideally speaking, it should be for a spiritual cause. But even for a worldly noble cause, that sacrifice elevates one towards the mode of goodness. And sattva sanjayate jnanam. Sattva helps us in developing knowledge. Dravya yajna. Now again, samshita vrata. The principle of yajna in terms of charity is not that it is done one time in a big quantity. It should be done regularly. All these yajnas, they don't lead to enlightenment unless they are done regularly. That's why samshita vrata, on a regular basis. So charity is not just an act, it has to be a habit. That regularly one keeps giving charity. So dravya yajna, tapo yajna. Another is performing austerities. So austerity is a part of Ashtanga Yoga, very fundamentally. But austerity is required in all yogas. So what happens by tapasya? By tapasya, there are two things that primarily happen. The first thing that happens is that we feel some sort of irritation or discomfort at the body level. Because say we decide to fast, or we decide to abstain from something which we would like to do. And this creates some sort of agitation, some sort of dissatisfaction, irritation. But as we discussed earlier, a principle of love is how much we are ready to sacrifice for the beloved. So, tapasya means we give up that which is normally comfortable for the body. But more importantly in tapasya, to be able to sustain that difficulty, that discomfort of the tapasya, one has to fix the mind on something higher. So when one fixes the mind on something higher, and normally speaking we may fix the mind on Krishna in a lackadaisical way. Lackadaisical way means not very wholehearted. You're thinking of so many other things also. Try to think about Krishna also. But if you're fasting, you know, if you don't think about Krishna, immediately our jatharagni will start burning. It is burning all the time, but the thoughts about Krishna can take our mind off jatra, of the fire of digestion, of the hunger in the belly. And if we don't think about Krishna, at the body level there is so much discomfort, we will feel miserable. But to some extent, austerity forces us to fix the mind on Krishna. So, sometimes when sufferings come, and sufferings become unbearable, a devotee is forced to take shelter of Krishna. So, austerity is the same principle. Now, we put ourselves in situations where we are forced to think of Krishna, forced to fix our consciousness in higher knowledge. And that's how the purification takes place. The purification is not just by torture in the body. Purification, the illumination is by fixing the mind on Krishna. Yoga yajna satha pare. So, apare means some other people. They also do yoga yajna. And then he says, swadhyaya jnana yajnascha. So, swadhyaya is swadhyaya, studying oneself to acquire knowledge. This is also a yajna. In fact, in the 18th chapter, 70th verse, when Lord Krishna is concluding the instructions to Arjuna by glorifying the Gita. So there, first he says, please preach this knowledge. 68 and 69 he says, preach this knowledge to everyone. If you preach it, you will become so dear to me. Nobody will be as dear to me as this. Then somebody says, preaching is a little too difficult for me. I can't preach. Says, okay, if you can't preach, at least study. They said, if you study, then you are worshipping me with your intelligence. That is 70th verse. And then Krishna says, hey, studying is awesome. I don't have so much study. Then at least hear, Krishna says. At least hear. Even if you hear, Prapnuvan Punya Karmana. Actually, you will be elevated to the higher planets. The planets of the pious beings. So, Chakravarti Pad explains over there that this will refer to Swarga Loka. It refers to Dhruva Loka. Dhruvaloka. Dhruva is a pure devotee and Lord Vishnu is also there with him. So it's as good as Vaikuntha. So Lord Krishna is saying, somehow or other you stay in contact with me. So there he says that those who study this knowledge, study the sacred conversation of ours, they are worshipping me with their intelligence. So actually the study is not just an intellectual activity, it is also a form of worship. Just like we do deity worship, we use paraphernalia. So like that, intelligence is the paraphernalia that we use to study scripture. So that is also yajna, swadhyaya jnana yajnasya. When one does study with this attitude is what? That actually I want to learn, I want to apply what I am studying. So if it is a challenging, critical, skeptical attitude, it won't lead to so much benefit. If there is a service attitude, a submissive service attitude, then that knowledge leads to much more benefit. And then after describing these different kinds of yajna, Krishna again returns to pranayama. As you know that the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita deal with karma, and karma gradually culminates in the karma yoga, then eventually one starts doing ashtanga yoga, yam, niyam, asana, pranayam, pratyahara. So in the fourth, fifth, sixth chapters there are repeated references to ashtanga yoga, and those references won't be so frequent. Again they will come in the eighth chapter, but afterwards the bhakti becomes much more prominent. So here now Krishna describes apane juvati pranam prane panam tatha pare prana pana gati rudva pranayama parayanah apare niyata harah pranan praneshu juvati.
Still others who are inclined to the process of death restraint to remain in trance practice by offering the movement of the outgoing breath into the incoming, and the incoming breath into the outgoing, and third at last remain in trance, stopping all breathing. Others, curtailing the eating process, offer the outgoing breath into itself as a sacrifice.
Pranan praneshu juhvati. So actually first of all we have to what is this outgoing air and incoming air? We actually breathe in, we breathe out. So it's as simple as that, but it's not as simple as that also. Because there is a whole regulated process. The whole process of breath and its regulation has been developed into a practically a science in the yoga systems. Because breath can lead to a lot of positive benefits, and of course breath, if it is unregulated, leads to negative benefits also. So we won't go into technicalities here, but Prabhupada talks about technical terms like puraka and rechak in the purport, which we will discuss later. And here apare niyata ahara pranan praneshu juhvati. Niyata ahara, ahara is food, niyata means regulated. So others regulate their food and they offer the incoming, the breath into itself. So our eating is also directly related with our consciousness. That's why as Prabhupada would say, you are what you eat. So how does our food affect our consciousness? In the Chaitanya Charitamrita Antilila, there is a chapter, chapter 16 I think, which is called Lord Chaitanya Tastes the Nectar of Krishna's Lips. And the title sounds very esoteric, but the whole chapter is primarily a glorification of Prasad. So for that, I think Prasad has touched Krishna's lips. And then we are tasting it. So there is the pastime of Kalidas and Jadu Thakur. And of course, in the later part of the chapter, there is also a description of how the flute that Krishna is playing has touched Krishna's lips. And the sweet sound of the flute is also a result of the nectar that the lips are getting, of the lips that the flute is getting and transmitting. But the point is that actually the food that we eat, if it is connected with Krishna, then it purifies us. At the same time, the food, if it is regulated, prasad, whether we eat in less quantity or more quantity, it is purified. But unlike chanting, the more we chant, we become more purified.
With respect to prasad, the purification is not proportional to the quantity.
Why? because chanting acts directly at the spiritual level, whereas prasad acts at a material level also. So prasad acts at a spiritual level. When we take prasad, we become purified. But because the prasad also has a physical component to it, it acts physically on our body. So if the quantity of prasadam that we take is not regulated, it is not proportional to the needs of our body, then at a physical level, our consciousness is going to get dragged down to tamoguna. So that's why niyataharaha, in the 18th chapter also, there is another word, laghvashi. Laghu means small, like a laghu bhagavatamrita. Laghu is like, ashi is to eat, laghvashi, one who eats little. Niyataharaha. So, as devotees, our goal is not to torture our body and eat less. But often, our goal is not to torture our body by eating too much also. Although that doesn't appear like torture to us, it may appear like enjoyment to us, but for our digestive system, it's often a torture. Because we eat so much sometimes. So, niyatahara, so the best way to regulate our diet is to, as Prabhupada would often say, take only prasadam. And as much as possible, try to take prasadam at fixed times. So ours is not a body torturing process. But regulation does help in keeping the mind peaceful for higher pursuits. Now in the next verse, so interestingly here, Prabhupada splits the verse a little later. Actually, normally a verse has, from the English point of view, translation point, 4 lines, or from the Sanskrit point of view, 2 lines. But here we see 6 or 3 lines. So, the reason for the splitting is that the verse after the next verse is one unit of thought. So, Srila Prabhupada often splits the verses not according to just the Sanskrit rules of verse splitting, but he splits them according to the units of thought. And now, in the next verse, Krishna will describe what is it that should happen by all these yajnas. The purpose of all these yajnas is purification.
Sarve pyaete yajna vido yajna kshapita kalmashaha yajna shishtamritam bhujo yanti brahma sanatanam.
All these performers who know the meaning of sacrifice become cleansed of sinful reactions, and having tasted the nectar of results of sacrifice, they advance towards the supreme eternal atmosphere.
Yeah. So, Brahma Sanatanam, that eternal Brahma. So this could be Brahman, Paramatma or Bhagavan, depending on the level of consciousness. Yajna Vido, those who know the purpose of Yajna. And what Yajna Shishta Amritam. So you remember the Yajna Shishta word comes in 3.13. Yajna Shishta Asina Santo. So here, it's not just asin, yajna shishta amrita. The remnants of the yajna are actually nectar. Yajna shishta shina santo. So yajna shishta amritam bhujo. So one who enjoys this. So what is this? So now literally speaking, when we do fire sacrifice, for example, yajna is done. So even the ash that is there, ash is considered sacred. That's why we put it on our forehead. So first time when they did a fire sacrifice in 26 Second Avenue for the initiation of the devotees. So at that time the smoke started spreading. And the smoke started spreading and the devotees said, let us open the windows. Prabhupada said, no, the smoke is very purifying, let it be over here. And everybody started coughing. And Prabhupada was completely calm. The Prabhupada was putting the ahuti and chanting the Sanskrit mantras and all the innocent candidates are practically coughing. And then finally, Prabhupada said, this smoke is purifying. And then eventually, when it became too much, Prabhupada said, okay, now you can open the windows. And when they opened the windows, and now suddenly the smoke started gushing out. And then when the smoke started gushing out, some of the neighbors thought this house was on fire. And they called the fire brigade.
Right in the middle of the yajna, the fire brigade came on there with the fire extinguishing hose. So they had no idea of this kind of sacred fire.
Because whoever had gone earlier,
the other spiritual leaders, none of them had taken up yajna. They had talked about pranayas, they talked about Advaita Vedanta. But neither of them had actually done yajnas over there. So it was quite sensational.
But Prabhupada was like that, yajna shishtamritam bhujo. So even the fire from the yajna is purifying. Yajna kshapit kalmashaha. Kalmashaha means purification. Kshapa means to destroy. So the impurities in the heart, kalmashaha, are destroyed by yajna. So the purpose of yajna is what? To purify ourselves. And the purification, to attain the eternal Brahman. So Krishna has now left Karmakanda far behind in second and third chapters. Now he is talking about transcendence. So by purification one will attain transcendence. And in the next verse, it is like a two-line verse, or Sanskrit one-line verse, which is like a sutra, which gives the essential principle of that underlies material existence. Nayam lokostya yagyasya kuto anya kuru sattama.
Who best of Guru dynasty without sacrifice, one can never live happily on this planet or in this life. What then of the next?
So kuru sattama. Sat means good. Sattama is uttama. So best among the kurus. So Krishna says, Nayam lokosti. Even in this world, you cannot live happily without sacrifice. What then to speak of the next world? So this is a rhetorical statement. Sometimes there are rhetorical questions I ask. How can people be happy when their minds are constantly agitated? So the rhetorical question, itself contains the answer. But it is a more effective way of speaking. So here Krishna says, how can you cannot be happy even in the next world? What to speak of this world? So yes, we can understand next world we cannot be happy, because if we are not cultivating spiritual credits, the next level we may descend to lower species or lower planets and we may have to suffer the karmic consequences. But what about this life? What does Krishna mean when he says that without sacrifice we cannot be happy even in this life? The literal meaning of the word sacrifice is, as we discussed yesterday, to make sacred. So when we offer something to the Lord, we make it sacred. And from a one point of view, sacrifice, although it means giving up something, actually the sacrifice involves giving up something small to give up something, to get something great in return. So even in ordinary worldly life, without some level of sacrifice, one cannot achieve anything. If a student wants to become a topper, you know, he has to sacrifice movies and cricket and sports so that he can focus. So he has to sacrifice an immediate enjoyment so that he can get a further enjoyment. So, and this principle applies everywhere. You know, even in a family, they want to have some relationship. The family members have to be willing to sacrifice for each other. Without that, we cannot have relationships. So the same applies for one's career. One has to sacrifice immediate comforts and pleasures so that one can have a bright career in the long run. So Prabhupada explains that without discipline one cannot achieve anything even in this world. What to speak of the next world? And even in this world, without discipline we cannot achieve anything. So even materialistic people, we can condemn them as karmis if we want, but those who are successful in material life, they do have the virtue of discipline. The sports stars, those who actually become star performers, they drill themselves for hours to get their practice in, whether it is cricket or athletics or high jump or whatever. And relatively speaking, we can call sports a frivolous activity. What more for if somebody wants to become expert in some field like medicine, or somebody wants to become expert surgeon, somebody wants to become an expert manager, an expert artist. So much practice is required. So without discipline one cannot achieve anything even in material life. So you know, one of the prominent chess players of India is from Pune. So one of his relatives had come to our temple. So he was telling that this boy, when he was trying to begin to play chess, so his father saw that he had talent, and his father, just to train him in chess, gave up his job. And whole day his father was playing chess with him. And you know, you should not play like this, you should not play like this. So practically every day, 10 to 12 hours, he was just playing chess. So you know, 10 to 12 hours, it doesn't become a game then, you know, it just becomes a headache practically. But so that is what is required. If one wants to be successful, even in material life, one requires discipline. Discipline means one sacrifices immediate pleasures for long-term pleasures. So now, in material life, the long-term pleasure is also selfish and material. But in spiritual life, the long-term pleasure is what? A devotee. Now we want to sacrifice sense gratification so that we can enjoy spiritual happiness. So we are also selfish, isn't it? Not exactly. A devotee wants to give sense gratification so that he can become pure-hearted, not so that he can enjoy spiritual happiness, so that he can serve Krishna better. So the devotee, for him, his happiness is a byproduct. We want to be pure for what sake? So that we can serve Krishna more, so that we can give Krishna more pleasure. Bhakti Samrat Sindhu describes how when Chitra and Patra are fanning Krishna, at that time they are beholding the beautiful form of Krishna. But when they are beholding the beauty of Krishna, tears start coming from their eyes. When tears start coming from their eyes, then they feel, oh, I'm not able to see where Krishna is sweating, where I should fan him, on this side, that side. And they start cursing their tears. And they want to simply serve Krishna. They want Krishna's pleasure, not their pleasure. You know, in the Goswami literature, the Lalit Madhava Radharani describes that Krishna, you know, if there is an animal who is in a cage and the cage is set on fire, then the animal will naturally try to run away. He said, my condition is like that. You know, I am in this body and separation from you is the fire that is burning this body. And I can't tolerate the separation from you. I want to leave. I want to just share my life. But he says, a cruel person, when he sets fire to a cage, he latches the thing, a cage mouth, so that the animal burns helplessly. He said, Krishna, you know, I would have left my body long ago. Radharani's body is spiritual. She cannot leave her body. But she's talking in terms of expressing her emotions. Say, I would have left my body long ago. But by your promise that I will come back, you have latched the cage. I am not able to go out of this body. Because I know that if you come back and you see that I am not there to serve you, then you will be unhappy. And I cannot tolerate your unhappiness. And so not let you be unhappy, I have to stay in this body. So Krishna, you are like that cruel hunter who has set my body in the cage on fire and has locked the cage by your promise that you will come back. So please come back and save me from this fire.
So that is Radharani's emotion.
So for a devotee, for Radharani, leaving her body would have been very easy. It would have been relief from the separation. But she doesn't want to leave the body because she is concerned not with relief from her suffering, but she is concerned with serving Krishna and ensure that Krishna does not get any displeasure. So that's why a devotee's sacrifice of material pleasures is not just for a higher spiritual pleasure. It is for a better quality service to Krishna. And of course, through that, a higher pleasure will surely come. But a devotee is not concerned primarily with the pleasure. A devotee is concerned with the service and the pleasure that it gives to Krishna. And actually, in one sense, that is the principle of preaching. In one sense, if we see, preaching involves a lot of agitation. We have to travel here, travel there, it disrupts our schedules, sometimes disrupts our sadhana also sometimes. And then we have to take up so much anxiety of management, of counselling. And to some extent, our spiritual life we can say would be much more peaceful if we did not take up the challenge of preaching. It is true, it could be peaceful, but it would not be so pleasing to Krishna. When we take up the sacrifice of preaching, then we take up agitation so that Krishna becomes pleased. And we will see that actually in the end, when other people become devotees, they start becoming happy in Krishna consciousness, and by their preaching, senior Vaishnavas are happy, then we also experience a sublime joy. So, but we focus on pleasing Krishna. And that is our ultimate purpose. Our happiness is a byproduct. Now this applies even in material life. That if one does not do yajna, one will not be materially happy also. What to speak of spiritually happy. So yajna does not refer to necessarily fire sacrifice. It refers to the principle of sacrificing something lower for something higher. So in modern management parlance, they call it as to subordinate your feelings to your values. So, subordinate your feelings. This feels good right now. But no, my value is that this is what I am going to do. And this is what I stand for. Subordinate your feelings to your values. So this is something which even modern management gurus talk about, because it is a universal principle. Now, from the cosmic point of view, the universe is sustained by yajna. That means the devatas get a subtle form of nourishment when we human beings perform yajna. And the dharma, the word dharma has many meanings. The normally it is translated as religion. Another way of translating is the irreducible quality, as we say. The dharma of the living entity is service. Another important meaning of dharma is order. Dharma means order or harmony. So, actually, in the dharma is what maintains the harmony and the order of the universe. So, within the order and the harmony of universe, the insentient objects do their dharma naturally. The electron moves around in its orbit naturally. It does not have any sentience of free will. So, this is one of the striking things which science has discovered, and that is also an anomaly in science, that scientists see that from the microscopic level to the macroscopic level, the universe is governed by order. There is order and harmony within the universe. But then, we see complete chaos at the human level. You know, somebody kills somebody, suddenly a tsunami comes and kills so many people, an earthquake occurs, and accidents occur, and so much chaos seems to occur. So, even from the scientific point of view, if we think about it, science shows order. Science shows harmony. But still people become atheistic to science because they see disorder at the human level. And not only at the human level, also at the organic level. You know, animals are competing and killing, but especially at the human level. So the way such is explained, yes, this disorder is there at the human level because the humans are causing and contributing to disorder. All the lower species and a non-sentient matter automatically does their dharma. Whereas humans have to consciously choose to do their dharma. So, the devatas do their dharma when we devan bhavetanena te deva bhavayantuva parasparam bhavayanta shreya paramabhavsetaha. So, in 3.11 Lord Krishna says that when we satisfy the devatas by doing our dharma, we do the yajnas regularly, and we satisfy the devatas. Then the devatas do their dharma by providing other necessities. And then, by mutual satisfaction, there can be harmony and prosperity for everyone. So that is the principle of yajna. Now after this, Lord Krishna will describe how the previous verse, he said the purpose of yajna is purification and attainment of the Supreme Brahman. But he says, now in this verse he will say, okay, the purpose of yajna is the acquirement of knowledge.
Evam bahuvidha yajnaha vitata brahmano mukhe karma jan vidhitan sarvan evam jyatva vimokshase.
All these different types of sacrifice are approved by the Vedas, and all of them are born of different types of work. Knowing them as such, you will become liberated.
So, Krishna, what is the name? Vitata brahmana mukhe. So now the word here, Brahman, refers to Vedas. Prabhupada is translating as Vedas. Some previous acharya translated as Brahmaji. The Vedas come from Brahmaji. They come from the ultimate absolute truth. Karma brahmodbhavam vidhi. Brahma akshara samudbhavam. In 3.14, Lord Krishna says, where is karma coming from? Karma brahmodbhavam vidhi. Brahma is the Vedas. And Brahma akshara samudbhavam. Akshara is the Supreme Lord. The infallible Supreme Lord. So, vitata brahmana mukha. So generally speaking, the sacrifices that are done, which are not according to Vedic regulation, they will not necessarily lead to knowledge or purification. So, vitata brahmana mukhe, those which come from the scripture. Bahuvidha yajna. So Krishna has told many different kinds of yajna, and there are some more also which are there in the scripture. Bahuvidha yajna, vitata brahmana mukhe. Karma jan vidhitan sarvan. So, all of them are born of activity. So, tani gyatva vimokshase. You will become liberated. How will you become liberated? Tani gyatva, by knowing this. By knowing what? That actually all the yajnas involve activity. So Krishna, Arjuna is saying you are becoming inactive. Krishna is saying, no, all the yajnas that are there, they are involving activity. So, the activity may be different. Activity may be breath regulation, activity may fasting is also an activity. It is the activity of not doing the activity of eating.
That's also an activity in verses. It requires a lot of willpower to do that activity.
So like that, all these are activities. So the activities lead to purification. And now, they lead to liberation. In the next verse, this section is a little abstract because we don't see any major practical application for us in the section. The next verse, Krishna will explain how, yes, all the activities are born of karma, all the yajnas are born of karma. But those yajnas which are performed in knowledge are superior to those yajnas which are performed without knowledge. Shreyan dravyamaya yajna vana yajna parantapa sarva karma khilam partha jnane parisamapyate. Yes, culminate in transcendental knowledge. So, sarva karma akhilam partha. Karma akhilam. Akhilam means end. Jnane parisamapyate. It should lead to knowledge. So, to some extent, there are organizations like superstition eradication, andhashraddha nirmulan. And these people say, why do people keep doing these mindless, brainless rituals again and again? It's of no use, just a waste of time. Yes, if you're just repeating the rituals without any intelligence, without any thought, without any consciousness, they can become blind, they can become pointless also. But if one is knowing that, these are to be performed in knowledge and they should lead to knowledge. That means, why are we fasting on Ekadashi? Yes, because I'm not the body, I'm the soul, and by regulating the bodily demands, I can make spiritual advancement. So when we do this with knowledge, then we can do it better. And when we do it better, actually it leads for the elevation of knowledge. So Nirjal Ekadashi is often a realization. I can live without food and water whole day. It's something which we thought would have been normally impossible. So especially once a year when we do it, it's team effort.
So it's much easier at that time.
But Krishna is telling here, Shreyan Dravyamaya Yajna Jnana Yajna Parantapa. That Dravyamaya is just sacrificing wealth. It is good. But better than is the sacrifice of acquiring knowledge. Srila Prabhupada will always say that if anybody gives us charity, we should always give them some knowledge in return. We don't just want to accept charity at a mundane level. If we accept charity, we should give knowledge. Because the sacrifice of wealth is good, but it does not necessarily in itself lead to spiritual knowledge. But there are so many materialistic people who give charity. No, the atheists are becoming aggressive in the West, in Europe and America. And one of the ways the religious people were taking moral high ground was by saying that religion makes people charitable. Religious people, it makes people virtuous, it makes people charitable, it makes people noble and selfless. So just to counter this, the atheists have started their own charitable organizations. And they often give lots of charity just to show that, you know, without God you can be charitable also. So, they are having their charity, like one of the popular atheist relief organizations. Their slogan is what? God, in double quotes, God sends calamities, we send relief.
So, it's so demoniac. It's all that God is sending calamities, it is our own bad karma which is sending calamities. But they are doing this, it's a charitable organization. But that charity is not leading to any knowledge, isn't it? That charity is only perpetuating ignorance. Therefore, dravyamaya yajna, the charity of knowledge itself is not enough. Shreyan dravyamaya yajna, jnana yajna parantama. Jnana yajna, the sacrifice in knowledge, the sacrifice that leads to knowledge is much better.
So, now in this section, from verses 25 to 30, 6 verses, Krishna describes different kinds of yajna. And from 25 to 29, he describes different kinds of yajnas. And 30 to 33, he describes the principle underlying those yajnas. And if you see in 25 to 29 what Krishna is telling, some people do like this, some people do like this, some people do this. But now in 34, Krishna is telling Arjuna what you should do. So, this is a statement in the imperative. Imperative means it should be done. So the scripture contains many kinds of statements. Some of them are just informational statements, some of them analytical statements. But Chakravarti Pal explained that those statements are in the imperative. You should do like this. They are instructions. And they are things which cannot be dispensed with. They have to be followed. So Krishna is telling Arjuna, yes, there are many different ways in which knowledge can be acquired. Then Arjuna is saying, okay, then do you want me to do Dravya Yajna? Do you want to do Tapya Yajna? Should I start doing Pranayama? What all should I do now? But Krishna says, no. What should you do? That he tells in this verse. Very well known verse. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshinaha. Yes. Tadvidhi, vidhi, know it to be. Pranipatena. Pranipatena is bowing down, submission. Pariprashnena sevaya. So now, if they render service unto him, ask questions unto him. Upadekshanti te jnanam. That self-realized soul will give you knowledge. Why? Jnanina tattva darshinaha. Tattva darshinaha. He has seen that. So, you know, if you are going to the Tirupati temple, they have made a very beautiful advertisement of Prabhupada's books. So, his eyes have seen the truth. His ears have heard the truth. His mouth speaks the truth. As it is.
So, very well.
His eyes have seen the truth. Tattva darshinaha. So, actually, the spiritual master is one who has seen the truth. Seeing the truth can mean at a exalted level, one has actually seen Krishna. But even if one has not seen Krishna, actually one is seeing Krishna everywhere by one's Krishna consciousness. Tavar jangam na dekhi, dekhi taramurti, sarvatra hai nija ishta devastu. So that is also one level of seeing Krishna. But one should be able to be a tattva darshi. The tattva is Krishna. And one should see Krishna everywhere. And one who is at that level, he can be a spiritual master. If you see in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, whenever Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would see a mountain, what would he think it to be? Govardhan. Whenever he would see a forest? Vrindavan. Any river? Yamuna. Now, was that river Yamuna? No, it was not. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu committing a mistake? Now, if it was Yamuna, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had no need to go to actual Yamuna. He could have just taken a bath over there. It was not Yamuna. But if it is not Yamuna, was he committing a mistake? What do you think? The conditioned soul has four defects. One of them is to commit mistakes. The Supreme Lord also has the defect committing mistakes. Actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu seeing every river to be Yamuna is not a dosha, it's a bhushana. It's not a mistake, it's not a blemish, it's a glory. Because as devotees, we are not just concerned with so-called objective reality. So-called objective reality means, okay, this particular place is this place, this particular is this place. You can memorize all the names of the countries in the world and all their capitals. Objectively you can acquire so much knowledge. But a devotee is not just concerned with objective knowledge. Because, what is the definition of Maya in Chatushtoki Bhagavad Gita? Chatushtoki Bhagavatam? Prate artham pratiyeta na pratiye chatmani. If one sees anything without its connection with Krishna, that is Maya. So one may have objective knowledge, accurate objective knowledge, and still be in Maya. Because that knowledge is not connected with Krishna. So, if one is able to see everything in connection with Krishna, that is freedom from Maya. That is reality. So, an ordinary conditioned soul, you know, he may just see a mannequin. Mannequin is in this cloth fashion shops. You know, they have these stone forms of women dressed in some clothes. An ordinary conditioned soul, he may see that and he may start thinking of self-gratification. That means, where there is actually no self-gratification, he imagines and starts thinking of self-gratification over there. So that much is how my mind is connected with lust. That is our sense revelation. That is illusion. So there also there is a false perception. But that is a false perception because of Mahamaya. And for a devotee, there is false perception because of Yoga Maya. So actually, if you see, the Bhagavatam says, Yaya Sammohita Jiva. Sammohita, you know that the Jiva is Sammohita because of his in illusion, because of which he thinks himself to be the body. Then so this is negative. This illusion because he thinks himself to be the body. Then there is Dhira Satranam Huyati. One says, oh, I am different from this body. One becomes Dhira. One is no longer an illusion. Or, Ya evam asammudho janati purushottama. So asammudha, one becomes free from illusion. So there is sammoha, then there is asammoha, asammudha. But then, in the Shri Goswami, I asked him what he said? Sammohita. What is that verse?
Radha Krishna Padaravin Sammohita.
Anyone remember that verse? Any apologies? They describe that.
Radha Krishna Guna Smritir Madhurima Nandena Sammohitau.
Sammohitau. So there is also a moha. But that moha is the moha because of Yoga Maya. So there is actually no Krishna, but hey Radhe Vrajade Vike Chaloite. Where is Radharani? Where is Krishna? That is the moha which is there. So now where there is no Krishna, the devotee sees Krishna over there. And that is glorious. So that moha is because of Yoga Maya. So actually our goal is not to become free from moha. Our goal is to become full of moha. But the moha caused by Yoga Maya. And to get to become filled with the moha caused by Yoga Maya, they have to become free from the moha caused by Mahamaya. So, Tattva Darshina means one who sees the Tattva. Tattva is Krishna everywhere. He is Tattva Darshi. And as a person, he can become a spiritual master. So, tomorrow we will discuss a little bit more about this verse. And then from here onwards, Krishna talks about what is the effect when one acquires transcendental knowledge. So, various aspects of transcendental knowledge we will discuss from tomorrow onwards. Any questions? Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki, Gai Gaur Premanandi.